For 2 months now, the National Gallery of Art in Washington has been full of beautiful women, beautiful, virtuous women. An exhibition at the gallery has brought together some 50 paintings, sculptures, and medallions that depict the Renaissance ideals of virtue and beauty. Some of the most famous of these portraits of women, by artists such as Botticelli, Verrocchio, and Leonardo da Vinci, are together again for the first time since the 15th century, when they were created in the workshops of Florence. David Allen Brown is the curator of Virtue and Beauty. He says the similar depictions of pale-skinned, rosy-lipped, blonde-haired ladies in the exhibition is no accident.
This comes from the belief that the Renaissance inherited from antiquity that outward physical beauty was a sign of inward beauty of spirit. And that is the concept underlying virtually all of the portraits in the show.
The first painting you see when you walk in is the profile portrait of a young woman by Filippo Lippi. Lippi was a notorious character in his day, a priest who had affairs with nuns and an eye for the ladies. Who knows if the woman depicted here was his muse or simply a representation of the ideal woman? She is painted in profile with a high forehead, tiny white seed pearls adorning her blonde hair, and a delicate diaphanous veil sweeping to her shoulders. She's wearing a rich green dress and holds her right hand to her breast.
It's at one level a heartfelt gesture of devotion, marital devotion, but you also have to note that she has rings on her fingers, and the hand held up to the breast in this way allows us to see her wealth as well as her beauty.
Why was that important?
Well, most of the women represented in profile in the earlier part of the show appear to be brides. The beautiful brocaded dresses and the jewels that they wear represent the bridal finery that they wore at this most significant social moment in their lives. Afterwards, they had to give up these beautiful clothes and jewels. The interesting thing, and I want to be clear about this, is that the clothes and jewels belong to the men, and in hard times they could be dismantled and used as currency. And in fact, the truth is that we know what women wore in this regard only through their portraits, because not a single garment remains from this period and not a single jewel.
They must have all been sold. Is that what we're supposed to deduce?
Yes.
But it's not only the front of the portraits that are representations of virtue and beauty. The back of the portraits were also painted. This one features swirls and circles of black and red, a kind of faux marble.
The backside, often featuring a kind of marbleized reverse like this one, is a kind of emblematic or symbolic representation of the lady's character. Marble always standing for enduring virtue.
This suggestion of marble on a painting's reverse side is carried further in one of the crown jewels of the exhibition, Ginevra de Benci. Part of the National Gallery's permanent collection, it is a portrait of a young girl by Leonardo da Vinci. Here, the marble effect on the reverse is even more pronounced. On it are painted laurel and palm branches, signifying moral and intellectual virtue. A Latin inscription reads, Virtutem forma decorat. Virtue adorns beauty. The front of the painting depicts the 16-year-old Ginevra. Curator David Allen Brown describes her effect on the viewer.
Well, she's a kind of a lunar presence with that beautiful porcelain skin and the pale pink cheeks and lips. And she's shown most unusually against a landscape background. Also departing in a very radical way from tradition is the fact that she's shown in three-quarter view, not the static, iconic profiles that we've been looking at. This really represents a major change, because the ladies represented in profile in these elaborate bridal garments that you see in the earlier part of the show are really remote, idealized presences that don't make any communication with the viewer. Leonardo's goal was to have their portrait sitters communicate with the viewer. They turn toward the viewer, and the ladies in the portraits begin to meet the viewer's glance.
In the next room, the biggest portrait in the exhibition is also the most idealized, depicting the artist's vision of the perfect woman. It's by Botticelli and recalls the female figures in his Primavera and Birth of Venus. The lady's chiseled features are painted in profile, and her blonde hair, full of waves and braids and curls, is arranged in an elaborate style, entwined with red ribbons, white pearls, and a feathered brooch.
This sort of hairdress was called a vespaio, or a wasp's nest. In addition, she clearly wears a wig besides her own bleached blonde hair, and a set of horsehair braids winds around her bust, so that this lady, whoever she is, if it is a portrait, is represented here as a nymph or a goddess.
One theory goes that this young woman in mythological guise by Botticelli is really a portrait of the most celebrated beauty of 15th century Florence, Simonetta Vespucci. She inspired poetry among the adherents of the Medici family, the great art patrons of the day. And that poetry itself had a distinguished history, for it grew out of the tradition of the Italian poet Petrarch, who idealized his own lady love in a series of magnificent sonnets.
The one that seems to relate in particular to Botticelli's Lady in Mythological Guise is this line reading, "Breeze that surrounds those blonde and curling locks, that makes them move, and scatters the sweet gold, then gathers it in lovely knots recurling." You could hardly find a more accurate description of Simonetta's hair, and in fact Botticelli would probably have read Petrarch's sonnet.
Now this one is very different. Agnolo Bronzino, this is just called Portrait of a Lady, but boy, is she bolder in all sorts of ways. The expression on her face, the way she's looking out at us, and her clothing, which is very bright, brilliant gem-like tones of emerald and red, and she's got a little dog on her lap. She's just very bold.
Yes, well, this is the culmination of that century-long progress toward the ancestor of the modern portrait, that is, a portrait that is psychological, that communicates with the viewer. This portrait of a lady who might be Francesca Salviati, who married into the Medici family, was painted by Bronzino toward the middle of the 16th century, and so it's one of the last portraits in the show. It is based, as you will have seen, on Leonardo's Mona Lisa. In Bronzino's case, we now have a real sense of contact with this lady as she looks out at us with this frank gaze. We feel we know something about her. She seems to have wit and intellect. The dog adds a playful note. There's even a mask on the chair reminding us that all faces are masked. We tend to think of portraits rather more simply in our culture. This is so-and-so, and whereas in fact these are very complex images of females that tell us a lot about the artists who painted them, about the expectations of the men who ordered the portraits. None of these women ordered these portraits of themselves, but also about how the women expected to be seen. And how the families wanted them to be shown. So they're all speaking likenesses in that sense.
David Allen Brown is the curator of Virtue and Beauty. The exhibition is on display at the National Gallery of Art until January 6th. And for this evening, that's All Things Considered. To see some of the portraits from the Virtue and Beauty show, visit us on the web at npr.org and follow the links to Weekend All Things Considered. John Buckley edits, Steve Lichtai directs, and Walter Ray Watson produces, with Annie Wu, Tracy Wall, Devar Ardalan, and Alice Winkler. Kitty Isley is the senior editor. Special thanks tonight to Jamie Deerwester. The technical director is Abdullah Rufus. Audio engineers include Ivan Burkeff, Kurt Turner, Daniel Shukin, Greg Gavin, Neil Ellis, Burke Hun, Stuart Grace, Carlos Gomez, and Radek Brablek. Our librarians include Maria Madison and Sally Robertson. Newscast producer is Quinn O'Toole. At the operations desk, Tom Woodward. The executive producer for Weekend News is Paul Brown. And I'm Lisa Simeone. Good evening from Weekend All Things Considered and NPR News.